Hi, I'm Rabbi Jim Egolf, and I want to thank you for joining me for this podcast. This week, I'm not going to be doing the talking. I'm actually going to turn the talking over to Avivit Chai, who works for the Interagency Task Force on Israeli-Arab Issues. And Avivit is one of two guides that took us into the Negev to introduce us to Bedouin communities during my recent trip to Israel. I want you to take a sense of, get a sense from her and from this conversation of just one of the complex issues with regards to Arab-Israeli dialogue. She's going to be talking a bit about how Arab Israelis and Jewish Israelis look at each other, but also that maybe for the first time, Arab Israelis took a moment to actually have a conversation among themselves about what it meant to be an Arab living in Israel. They tended to forget the fact that there was supposed to be a Jewish character to Israel. On the other hand, quite honestly, I think there are times when Jews also forget that there happens to be a Middle Eastern character to Israel as well. Well, Avivit's going to talk about some of the struggles that have gone on and some of the reactions to a report that was put out in 2006 by a variety of different Israeli Arabs on this particular topic of what does it mean to be Arab and Israeli. I want to thank you so much for joining me this week. You can always email me at ravisinvictorjim@gmail.com, ravjim@gmail.com, or you can always Skype me at ravjim, or even call me at 610-624-3441, and you can leave a message on my Skype line. Again, thank you so much for joining me, and I appreciate you listening. Shalom.
You mentioned a series of papers with four. Could you elaborate? I'm not familiar.
Question was regarding the vision documents. What happened was that in 2006, pretty much independently, four different Arab groups published four position papers. But each of them had a different name. It doesn't really matter the breakdown. There is one paper that was published by the Higher Follow-Up Committee of Israeli Arabs, which is, if there is one, this is their representative body. It includes the mayors of all the Arab towns and villages and representatives of all their political parties. And the follow-up committee, so this is basically the most important document, and they're also pretty similar in their general approach. So I'll just address this one. This is the one everyone talks about. What they did is for the first time in the history of Arab citizens of Israel, they gathered an extremely serious group of 40 academics, activists, heads of organizations, ex-officials from the Arab sector, and thinkers and thought leaders. And they went through an extremely in-depth process in which they, for the first time, tackled the questions of who are we in the state of Israel? How do we see ourselves? How do we see the state? And how do we see the future of ourselves in the state and the future of the state of Israel? What came out of it is a very long, very detailed, and extremely controversial document. And I'll allow myself to not present it to you in the way that you would read it, because the way it was constructed was basically they asked eight of the people to write each one a chapter on one issue. So one wrote a chapter on education, another on social services, another on identity, and so forth. And then there was an introduction, and they put the whole thing together. So the process was that each one wrote a paper, and then the group commented, and then he rewrote it, and so forth. And so they have eight chapters and an introduction. I think if you would have read the eight chapters, you would have agreed with most of it. It basically talks about equality, about equal access, about equity in the division of budgets, about allowing a minority minority group to teach its own culture and to serve its people in accordance with cultural sensitivities, religious sensitivities, and so on. The main problem of the document was the first chapter. And the first chapter basically challenges the Jewish nature of Israel, saying that as long as Israel defines itself as Jewish and as the homeland of the Jews, Arabs will never be equal. They will always be second-class citizens. And it therefore calls for a state of all its citizens, for Israel to change into a state of all its citizens, with a minority group that has national, cultural, ethnic rights, and a majority group that has national, cultural, ethnic rights under a state that does not have an ethnic or nationalistic or religious, whatever you want to call it, Judaism character. Interestingly, the leaders of this process and the follow-up committee and the people who wrote the various chapters were completely and utterly shocked at the outrage that this document generated. And it generated a whole lot of outrage. Basically from wall to wall on the Jewish side, whether in Israel or outside of Israel. And the shocking thing to me was that they were so shocked that there would be such an outrage. I think this relates to one of the most important things that Vivian told you, which is the different narrative, the different story that the two populations here tell about anything that you ask. It can be 48, it can be 84, it can be 2009. They tell totally different stories based on completely different facts. And I'm saying it like this because for each side these are facts, for the other side they are not facts. And I'm not being a complete relativist because I don't believe in relativism, but that's the reality. I mean, the reality is that we tell extremely different stories as the two communities. Of course, there are great diversities, and I do want to avoid talking about Jews on the one side and Arabs on the other side. I think you have two Jews here who don't represent the majority of Jews in Israel at the moment. And you'll meet Arabs who also represent a specific approach within the Arab community. And I think this is one of the things that the task force sets out to do, is not only to educate that there are Arabs in Israel, but also to educate that they are as heterogeneous as we Jews. If there are three Jews around the table and they can't agree on anything, you put three Arabs, you get the same result. So that was the document that was written. There was disagreement, but it wasn't only disagreement. There was real outrage. There was fear. There were very, very vociferous attacks against the writers of this document, against this approach that it delegitimizes Zionism, that it's anti-Semitic, that it's... I mean, yes. They were very, very harsh.
The way it played in our communities, and which blunts the larger holy work of what you're doing, is the rewriting of HaTikvah. In other words, Joe and Jane Jew in our communities that we lead, yeah, sure, there's heterogeneous, but the rewriting of the national anthem, in other words, that's how superficial we're dealing with the people we lead, and I don't know if you have strategies as well to...
So what happened following this... I mean, I was told, just as an anecdote, but I think it also sheds light on some of this process. There was a lady, an organizational consultant, that led the process. And she was asked, I mean, didn't you think what the Jews are going to say about this? I mean, is this the most productive way to get to where you want to go? And she said, and she also wrote this actually in a commentary paper that she wrote about the process, but she also said this to me. She said, you know what? I'll tell you the truth, it doesn't sound very serious, but this is the truth. For the first time, we sat in a room, just us Arabs, talking about ourselves, developing our own visions. She said, I swear to God, we forgot there are Jews out there. And she said, we saw this as a sign of empowerment. Obviously, they now realize this was a huge PR mistake, if you want to be superficial. But yeah, there's a serious problem here. The problem is not, and I don't want to be, we don't want this day to be about rounding corners. The problem is not just about development, about equal budgets in education, about having or not about having a shelter to run to. It's also about national identities. It's also about ethnic identities and religious identities and the identity of this country that's still developing its identity. And these are very serious questions. I don't have a one-line answer to you on that. I do have a much longer answer for you. And I really want us to talk about this today because I think this really is the main challenge that Israel faces. It's a challenge that America is facing and has faced along its development. And apropos Atikva, I'm not sure that changing or not changing the words is even the right question to ask. The question is, what does Atikva mean? Does it have to mean the same thing for everybody? Can you have other solutions, various solutions, more liberty to relate or not to relate to national symbols. That was a pretty long answer to your question.
I'm just wondering, given the recent election and the fact that it's not seen, I love these kind of process things. These conversations are nice. Talking about empowerment is great, but you've got a Knesset that and a national population that said no dice. And so I'm wondering, to what extent are you strategically working to get people elected in positions of actual power who might do something other than have nice lunches with rabbis, which is great?
I happen to have the great pleasure of transferring this question to Vivian. No, the answer is that the task force has a task force. No, his question was, given the results of these elections, is there strategic work vis-a-vis political players, I guess, is what you're asking, and the political process and public opinion and so on. The answer from the task force side of it is that is not our role. Our role is bringing this issue to the mainstream consciousness of American Jewry and making sure that American Jewish organizations work within their mandate also on this issue. So if they fund in Israel, they should also fund this 20% or 70% of Israel. If they advocate for other stuff in Israel, they should also advocate for this issue. I can tell you that, for example, as the task force in our members' meeting that was in September, we had two people from the Prime Minister's office in a video conference give us reports on what the government and what the Prime Minister is doing on these issues. And I think that if the government knows that there are 80 important Jewish American organizations, including the one that I listed, who are definitely among the most important, including the three religious movements and so on, sitting in the room and asking, we're watching, we care. What are you doing about these issues? I mean, these are citizens of the state. We care about the state. I mean, this just asking the questions many times, you'll be surprised at how many times we are told, that's the first time anyone's asked me that question. When we just ask, for example, in a certain university whose name I won't mention, how many staff members who are Arabs do you have? How many senior lecturers who are Arabs? How many students who are Arabs do you have? Usually the answer is, I have no idea. No one's ever asked me that question. So from our side, just asking the questions and showing that Jews around the world care, who care about Israel, not as an anti, but as a pro-Israeli approach, is very important. In terms of actions on the ground, that's what
I think that we're all in a state of mourning and shock right now. It's very hard to answer that question in an honest way.